Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we have Eric Rosenberg in the Cigar Lounge. Eric, how are you today?
I'm very well, Joe. I'm very happy to talk with you, and I'm looking forward to great conversation.
Well, let us know a little bit up front about what it is that you're doing. What is happening in your life? What are you doing right now?
Well, I had that question from my family and my friends since I've started working. Now, in short, I'm looking to acquire small business. I'm helping an app to basically help a five-star hotel sell their unused amenities. That's okay. An app from Europe that I'm helping them here. And I'm trying to zoom in what type of topics I really want to pursue, eventually a keynote. And last but certainly not least, I'm preparing a group coaching for people specifically in the meetings and event industry that own their business. So a little bit of everything, but not yet the thing that I can tell you, yes, that's what I'm doing. And every time I wake up in the morning, I know exactly where I'm going to put my energy, which is a little bit frustrating, but that's what it is.
And are you currently putting your energy into a world where you're trying to figure out who you are? Or is there something occupying your time right now that's getting in the way of you figuring out who you are?
That's a very good question. I don't think there's anything getting in the way. I'm blocking the time to do that. I'm not trying to figure out what I'm good at or what I'm not good at, because I think that after several years now, I kind of know myself. But I haven't found the new thing now that I want to focus on. I had a corporate event agency for 20 years. It was a passion of mine. I'm glad I did it. I don't want to do it anymore. So I'm trying to find the next thing that I'm going to get passionate about.
Now, tell me about this corporate event agency. What were you doing?
So I plan in over 50 countries in the world, sales meeting, product launches, incentive travels, exclusively for corporations, conference and part of trade shows in the conference. And the idea was always to create memorable experiences that people will be unable to reproduce if they go back with their families and their friends to the same place. Every time we did that, it created amazing, amazing memories for people who are still talking about it. But that's only for corporates. I refuse to do any bar mitzvah or wedding. I just wanted to do corporate events. And it was awesome. Yeah, really awesome.
I always say Boy Scout banquets and bar mitzvahs, they are the devil's playground. I hate it working those.
I agree. A wedding, you know, when you have to sit down and say, no, this person cannot be seated with that person. Is going to, I don't want that nightmare.
That's funny. So let me ask you this, because, so you did this for 20 years. What would you say in those 20 years is the greatest memory you ever created? What would you say was the greatest thing that happened in those 20 years?
You know, that's a great question. I cannot single one, but I remember, for instance, we did something for Sony Music at the end of the 90s, beginning of the 2000, where the industry started to go down, but it was still a good time to do that. And we did program in Zimbabwe, and we did then program in India. In India, we were having lunch in the private dining room of the Maharaja of Jaipur on the Lalik table.
Wow.
In Zimbabwe, we did so many. I did the bungee jumping there during the inspection. But with the client, we create surprise. So the commercial director was a veteran from the Belgian army, and they all knew that. It was his best customer. And the last evening, he told them, tomorrow morning, you're going to be dressed to walk in the bush. We're going to do a drop-off. I said, what? We're going to drop you in the bush. You have to answer clues. We're going to have one guide. And you have 2 hours to come back to the hotel. After 2 hours, you have an emergency number to call. And his customers, the guy is nuts. And actually, the next morning, we put them in a little group in a Jeep. And when they were at the Elephant Hills Hotel in Zimbabwe, in Victoria Falls. And when they were out of sight, we took them out of the Jeep. And he told them, ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to walk. You're about to fly over Victoria Falls. So they were screaming, yay, first, because they didn't have to walk. Second, because that was a surprise. And that was the whole idea. If you and I are going to Zimbabwe tomorrow in Vic Falls, and we know we're going to do the helicopter, since day one, we're going to say, okay, when is the helicopter? When?
Right.
When you're not expecting it, and suddenly it's happening, the impact is great. And just to conclude on that story, when the customer came back from Zimbabwe, they bought one page of advertisement in the professional magazine of the industry to thank Sony Music.
That's great.
And 2 years later, we wanted to do something completely different. I told them, don't let them compare. So we took them to India and did something absolutely amazing. And when they came back, they bought the back cover of the professional magazine in the industry to thank the company. But there's so many stories, so many, you know, a volcano erupting in Iceland and what you do afterwards. So it was 20 years of excitement, but also a lot of stress.
You know, you're making me smile because so many speakers and entertainers at work conferences say, I create memories. I do things that are memory. Yeah. And I'm laughing going, yeah, you threw down the gauntlet on that one. No, because that's real. That's what I call the real drama that makes an event unforgettable when something happens like that. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I got to ask this question. What's the worst thing that ever went wrong?
Huh? I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
I have Yala Chokul. So I'm having lunch in Brussels with friends. And you know, it's Brussels. So you can have a glass or two glasses of wine at lunch, no problem. And so I'm serving wine to the friends. And one said, nah, I'm flying this afternoon. I said, okay. He's a private pilot. And then he received a phone call during the lunch, hang up the phone and said, Eric, give me a glass. I said, Mark, you told me you have to fly. They know they're closing the airport. And I look outside, it's blue skies. Are you kidding me? They said, nope. You know, Eyjafjallajökull, the volcano in Iceland that erupted, the cloud of ashes was going over Europe and they were closing one airport after the other.
Oh, wow.
And that was a Friday at lunch. And the next week we had 5 program, including incentive trip in Asia.
Oh, my.
So that was a very interesting weekend. I'm chartering 2 planes in Switzerland for the largest consulting firm. And one of the plane, the starter is not working. So you have to find, we were in Sardinia and we had one guy that was not even from our group, but that fell on the corner of a table and it was going to die if nothing was done about it. I mean, there is, if you work in this industry, the rule is the following. Nothing ever happened exactly the way it is planned.
Exactly. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, sadly, I'm laughing. I did much smaller events than that, but I always just shake. And I was listening to you because I had a 82-year-old hemophiliac trip on a speaker stand and cut his arm. And everybody saw it happen and the entire event just froze. That was a long time ago and very disturbing.
Yeah.
But sometimes those things happen, but that's when you get into the real world, things aren't as perfect as we think they are.
Nope.
So when you're out now, I mean, you're out speaking now, right? Are you speaking about before it's too late or are you?
I do speak about that book that I wrote to my daughters and why we left Belgium and came to this great country, America. I'm not looking to become the speaker on the fight against anti-Semitism. I'm not looking forward to be speaking like that, professionally speaking, if you want. I mean, like my business. But
well, let me interrupt because I think we have to make it clear. There's some people listening to this and some members that really don't even know what your book is about, but it's called Before It's Too Late.
Yes.
And my understanding is it's a message to your daughters.
It is a message to my daughters why we took them out of the family in Belgium 10 years ago, why we left Belgium in Europe and why we came to America and became Americans. And it's it's everybody who's read it has told me I had no idea.
Right.
So I'm proud of having written that for them. It's a legacy project. I'm also happy that I've published it because there's a lot of people that were asking questions. So to answer your question, my motto is always the same. Silence is complicity. So yes, if people ask me, I will speak on it. But it's a legacy project. It's not my business.
It's a labor of love. And
totally.
Yeah. And that is when people ask, you're not marketing, you're not reaching out.
No. Nope.
Yeah. Okay. No. And I just asked so people understand that. I mean, I think so many people think that people write a book because it's a vehicle to speak, where sometimes you just write a book for personal reasons.
Absolutely. And it is a vehicle to speak for other topic for other people. But for me in this particular case, it's really, and again, I'm extremely proud of having written it for my daughters and the next generation and my family. But it's not a business at all.
Well, and let's do this. So you're not really speaking. What is it when you're out? Are you speaking at all right now?
Very little. Okay. And that's what I'm trying to define, because there's different topics I could speak on. But I want this really to help people make an impact. And also I want to do something that I'm not bored after 3 months of always speaking about the same thing.
Well, let's do this. Let's look at your life this way. If I take the last 7 days of your life, tell me what you were working on for the last 7 days. What are you doing?
The last 7 days, I was on an RV trip with my youngest in Maine and had totally disconnected from the social media and emails.
That's perfect. Perfect. So that's why I couldn't look on social media and find out that you were somewhere social. And I asked a question that has no real business answer. All right. The 7 days before that, what did you do?
It's so part of it is recording for my podcast, The Business of Meetings.
Okay.
Part of it is helping this app Momenti. Part of it is helping some business owners that I'm coaching. Part of it is helping and preparing the new group for EO Accelerator that I'm coaching. And that's it's a nonprofit time. And part of it is analyzing deals and looking at a business to eventually acquire it. And so it's almost a full-time job, but right. Yeah.
So, and I understand buying a business. I think that's easy to understand what you're doing, but what kind of coaching is it you do? C-suite level? What is it?
So it's for business owners. I've always been a small business guy.
Okay. Small. Okay.
It's small business owners that want to make a change. They want to grow their business or scale their business or get more time, that are completely overwhelmed or don't know which part of their business they should be leaving to others and delegate. So it's really about managing and growing your business. It's not about negotiating with hotels or negotiating with any vendors. It's you as an entrepreneur.
Okay.
What is it that you need to focus on? What you need to reflect on? And then how you're going to translate that in the company you're running? It's right. It's very down to earth. It's accountability and sharing experiences.
And as I was going to say, and it's things that you have done through your life apply to everything you do every day.
I would believe that 70 to 80% of the challenges for any business owners are the same, regardless of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And 20 to 30%, it's actually what make you successful or not. It's specific to your industry.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you find in your career that people are more inclined to want to talk to someone in their industry or someone outside of their industry?
They usually, from my experience, that they're more inclined to talk to someone in their industry. I'm surrounding myself specifically with people that are not from my industry because I want to get new ideas.
And from your experience and your smile, the audience is listening to this, but I can see you smile. So I'm listening to you and I want to ask, when people are looking for someone specifically in their industry, do you think that's sometimes a mistake? Do you think they should be more open to ideas from the outside?
You know what? That's a very good question. I think it's really both. because you want to find something, somebody who has done it before,
right,
to help you grow to where they've been before. And you also want to have new ideas, new way of doing. You know, I love this book, The Medici Effect, when the Renaissance, they brought people from totally different industries to work together.
Yes.
I remember this example of an architect that is building a building without air conditioning, but where the temperature is the same all the time, because they went to somewhere in Africa and saw this ant thing that the animals had built, where the temperature was the same, and they kind of copy that. So I like to get ideas from other industries. And I also like to talk with people that have done it before me and have been successful.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I remember that chapter extremely well. That is an excellent book. And if anyone hasn't read it, I'm drawing a total blank. It's something Johansson.
Yes. Yes. It's somewhere behind me. That.
Yeah. Franz, I just looked it up. Franz Johansson. Mm. And it's a great book. And by the way, unfortunately, I don't want to get lost on a tangent, but that's down my lane of multidisciplinary and cross-disciplinary thinking. So let me ask you this. Who would you say, and I don't care where in your career we're talking about, but throughout your career, who would you say was one of your biggest supporters, mentors, or role models?
My grandfather.
Okay, and why? Talk about him for a minute.
When I resigned from the company I was a partner with and decided to start my own company, he came to me and he said, "Here, you don't have to worry about sleeping or eating for a year." And that was the greatest support you could hope for. And that was really, you know, in terms of lowering your stress level, starting a business, it was really awesome. Really awesome.
And did he, I mean, and I'm assuming you meant you don't have to worry about eating or sleeping for your meaning financial support.
Yes.
But did he give you business support also?
No.
Where did that come from? Where did the business support come from? Where did those ideas come from?
From two sources. One is a group of, for many years, a group of, we were four, mm-hmm. and meeting every 2 months. And it was called the Carpe Diem Day. And okay. You had to organize it for the other, doing some activities during the day. And it always had to finish with a Michelin star restaurant, because in Belgium, there's a lot of them. And so we were talking about business. We're talking about fiscal law, especially in Belgium, which is insane. Exchanging experiences. And the second one, and I learned that very early in my career when I was in a student organization, we had the board of advisors.
Okay. And
so I've always enjoy talking with people that are elder than me or that have different things that they've done in their life, but that I can ask them. And until today, I have probably 15, 20 people that I always go to when I have a new idea, or in this case, when I have a business that I'm thinking I want to buy. So I have people that have an experience that I don't have in private equity in a very large corporation, and I'm asking their opinion. And obviously at the end, I make my own choice.
How did these people come into your life? How did they come into your path? Just you worked with them over the years? Tell me.
Many of them came from the association. So ISEC was a student organization, and I met a lot of people there. And actually got doors open to develop business thanks to that. Then MPI, Meeting Professionals International, was a volunteer for many, many years, had the opportunity to chair the international board. Okay. And I met a lot of people there that even helped me when I had to receive letters to get the visa, the extraordinary ability visa. It's people that you meet along your life. People in Cigar Peck, same thing. You call me one day, you need something, I'm going to pick the phone and help you because we know each other, I've talked with each other. But there is no always an idea of, I need to connect with that person because business could be, I hate that. It's just, you know, you enjoy people and right. And then that's it.
And it's, I was going to say, it sounds to me that a lesson to be learned is you built your network by building a large group of friends rather than associates. You have people that two-way trust, two-way relationships, and you know they're going to be there and they know you're going to be there.
Absolutely.
And it's from various walks of life, not just in one area, not just in the speaking world, not just in the event planning world. It's every lane you've ever been in. You keep your network alive.
Absolutely.
And that's what I think. That's a good thing for people to realize. It's not just what you're doing today. It's everything you've ever done. Do you still have contact with all of those people?
Yes.
And that is, that's a great lesson for people to reflect on, because some people that we know in our industry get stuck dealing with just people in our industry, and there's so much more value out there. And I think that's great. And it's good that we're here for each other, but it's also good sometimes to push people out of the nest. What do you do if you wake up in the morning? What does your typical day look like? How do you organize your day? Is there a set system to what you do?
Yeah. So before going to sleep, actually, I look at the next day and take my phone and put alarms for every single appointment, to leave on time, to be there. If it's a Zoom, 10 minutes before it rings. So I set the whole day like that. And every Sunday, I look at the week.
Okay. So you do that every night with setting
every
that?
Every night. Every night.
Wow. Good for you. Okay. I just do the Sunday thing. Yeah.
I do both. And then in the morning, depending if there are schools or not, or if I have to, you know, now the elder one is driving, so it's a different story. But I try to meditate, to do some sport, and then to get on with the day.
And in the midst of all of it, what is it? What is the prime motivator, the prime moment event or thing or feeling that makes you want to keep going and not give up? What is it that drives you?
My family, my kids.
Okay.
You know, we left Belgium. My wife was a lawyer and was managing her father's firm. She's now a very successful realtor here in South Florida. So she also restarted her career. But when we moved, I was 47. And besides having an idea and a vision and wanting to come here, I had no client. I had nobody was waiting for me, but I had an amazing network. And the bet was I will find something.
Okay.
But now, you know, it's my daughters, it's their development and get them started in life. And so that's the greatest motivator for me. But I would say for anyone, from the moment that you understand clearly why is it that you're doing something, that's the energy that you're getting in. But coming here, and that's what I wrote in the book, that so many stories, so many frustration. Again, everybody is helpful, but nobody's waiting for you. If you don't know why you're doing that, then it's very difficult.
How old are your daughters, by the way?
2017 and 13.
2017 and 13. So I guess I'm laughing because normally I ask people the question, if you could go back and tell your 16-year-old self and give your 16-year-old self advice, what would it be? And I'm laughing because I realize I'm interviewing somebody today who actually wrote an entire book about what advice he would give his children in that exact age range.
Well, that's funny. Well, actually, yeah, no, not really. That's not about what they should be doing, but it's more about why we took that decision.
Oh, okay.
And why we did that. But it's always crazy for me. I guess a lot of people, they will always choose misery over uncertainty.
Wait. Let's just stop there. Let that soak into some people.
Yeah.
People do that.
Yeah. And for me, regardless of the topic, if you come to a conclusion, regardless of what it is, and you don't act on it, I mean, there's something, I mean, you're missing something for sure.
No, and that is a true statement. So if you were, let's say you were sitting down and you're giving your self-advice as a teenager back in Belgium, what advice would you give a younger version of you?
Well, you need to remain stubborn and believe in what you're doing. And in the meantime, listening to the experience of others, but really make your choice. That would be one for sure. And the second thing is never stop learning, ever.
Beautiful. All right. Let me go into one other area here, which is, and I kind of know your answer, but is there something on your horizon in the next 30 days that you are hoping is going to change everything for you? Something new on your plan, in your whiteboard, in your vision board? Is there something you think is going to make a great change for you?
I hope. I'm trying to zoom in on the positioning and the topic that I want to develop in the future. So I think I have a clear idea of what I'm good at and not good at, but where do I apply all of this?
And I was going to say, and we all know that I know you. So yes, you're going to be looking for what Mark Levy calls your big, sexy idea.
Hopefully, yep.
Yep. So, yep. And I think we all wish you well on that and look forward to your success on it.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll hear some great things in the future. For right now, if anyone in Cigar Peg doesn't know how to find you and get a hold of you, what is the best way for people to reach you?
The very best way for sure is LinkedIn.
Okay.
Or my email, I'll give you my private email is Eric, E-R-I-C, at rosenberg.com. And it's rozenberg.com. And I always have to spell it because with my accent, people wonder, how would you spell that? And so I just did that.
One last question before we go, because I just want to add, is there any career that you always wished you could have done, whether it made you money or not? Something you think would have been fun to do at some point in your life that you chose not to?
That I choose not to because it wasn't good that way. But when I turned 40, I celebrated my birthday and I rehearsed for a year. I gave a concert in front of 300 people, friends and family for 2 hours. And I sang with professional musician. It was phenomenal. And on one hand, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is so great. The adrenaline, it's wonderful to be on stage. And then I also thought, I'm talking about all those artists. They don't have a private life. Anywhere they go, people recognize them. I don't want that. So,
but you did it.
I did it. Yeah.
You did it. Eric, yeah. That's awesome. Well, and I thank you for joining us in the Cigar Lounge.
Thank you, Joe.
Appreciate you being here today.
Thank you very much.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.